Before AI can help your business predict demand, accelerate growth, inform decisions, automate tasks, reveal insights, generate content, you have to trust it. Introducing WatsonX Governance, helping you govern any AI as data, models, and policies change so you can scale it responsibly. Let's create AI that begins with trust with WatsonX Governance. Learn more at ibm.com/governance. IBM, let's create.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
It's weird. Sitting down at the mic again.
Yeah, it's been a minute. Yeah.
Right at the top, I will throw out for the listeners. I almost said the viewers.
The viewers.
That's how disconnected I am from the audio world right now.
In their mind's eye, I'm sure they're picturing us.
Oh, they're picturing much better than what than reality.
That's why I don't like to share pictures of ourselves. We prefer whatever you're thinking.
But I will say, we've continue to be scattered and sporadic for various reasons, but I am still very excited. We will have news for you guys soon about, you know, our whole schedules lately and how everything's been going. Mm-hmm. One way or another, I think the fires of industry, they burn slow, but we're on the brink.
They burn fast, but they warm slow.
Yeah.
Maybe. Or something.
We're on the brink of cool new news, but until then,
gotta say, we appreciate your patience with
us. Really,
sorry
do.
To be so spotty with our recordings and sending things out, but we really, really enjoy making this show. We promise. We are working on it, and we miss you guys. So
we miss
thanks
you guys.
For missing us.
We
it
love
really
you guys.
Means a lot.
We've gotten some messages checking in. Are you guys okay?
I know.
We're like,
how nice to
we
to,
are
for people to care.
We are, and it'll all be worth it. I'm so very excited. But part of recently, we did go out of town.
We did go out of town.
We
went back to,
of course,
the promised land.
Las Vegas, baby!
We got offered some free rooms because of our last trip to Vegas.
Yeah, it doesn't take much, apparently.
Eli just kind of turned to me and he's like, hey, I don't know, do you want to go stay? Do you want to go back
actually,
to Vegas? And we hadn't planned a trip for this year, so I was like, fine.
If I may say, I got that email offering us 3 free nights at Park MGM, and I turned to you very much expecting an eye roll. And No, I'm not going back to Vegas. And I distinctly remember you saying, you know what? Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was shocked.
Right.
I was like, well, if you want to, then we're definitely going, because I always want to.
Well, I
want
to go somewhere.
Yeah.
I don't want all our vacations to just
no,
be Vegas.
I don't either.
In fact, is not going to work for me.
This one ended up being a full 7 days
that
unplanned.
Was really crazy.
And I'm good for a minute.
And I'm going to tell y'all, 7 days is too long. It's too much Vegas, but
I know.
I mean, we usually take a trip for our anniversary. It's our anniversary next week, actually.
Yeah.
And we hadn't really planned anything this year because of all the reasons we're so scattered. We're not really sure what's going on right now. So a lot of things up in the air, a lot of balls up in the air. So we were like, I was just like, I don't know what else we're going to plan for this year. So we may as well just go for it. I mean,
free
I feel
hotel
like
rooms.
Free stuff. Yeah. I'm fine to accept free stuff.
Yeah.
And we did accept a lot of free stuff.
Oh, did we? And I'll tell you, well, we'll give a little brief recap of the trip in the upfront here. We got into Park MGM. They gave us a nice little upgrade to our room, which was very kind of them. They put us up on the 23rd floor, which had been recently renovated, and they put us in a Staywell room, which has a air purifier and hypoallergenic pillows and a vitamin C infused shower, whatever that means.
It means nothing.
What it is you go in there and the hose of the shower has this little, it looks like the Ninja Turtles 2 Secret of the Ooze
like
canister, except it's orange.
Instead of green.
And the shower water is going through that before it comes out the shower head. So you're like, Tang is being applied
tang
to our skin right now in this shower.
Tang in there.
The room itself, however, did not appeal to us. It was an accessibility room, which is wonderful and helpful, I'm sure, someone who needs it. But like, for example, the closet rod was set very low, so Diana couldn't hang the dresses that she brought up in the closet. And there's no furniture because obviously they want the walkways to be wider.
Right.
So there was no drawers to put our clothes in.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these things that, or for example, we really liked the standing shower that we had last time when we stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And this time there was a tub with some, you know, accessibility features, handrails and a bench and things like that, which is all cool. But it wasn't for us.
Yeah, we didn't need it.
Yeah.
So it was just like, you know, a little bit disappointing. But I thought it was very strange that a lot of the decor was just gone. And, you know, I was like, some of the stuff on the wall, I feel like it shouldn't have an effect. Or even painting the wall or something just so that it has some vibes in there. It's still a nice hotel room. The view was great. It was like a pool view.
Oh, poolside view. Lovely.
But yeah, in a lot of ways, I was sort of like, well, I'm angry for my accessibility friends who are getting this kind of like dingy room. But I'm glad that they, of course, it's very important to have those accommodations.
Yeah.
So that's more important that your room is functional than pretty.
So the next day, Diana had treated herself to a Bellagio massage spa package.
Yes.
And I know you had questioned it. Do I want to spend this money? And I was like, do it. We're here. We're making this as cheap a vacation as we can. Have your one splurge thing.
It's true.
And while she was gone, I thought, well, maybe I'll see if I can get our room changed. And so you tell them your spa experience.
Which I'm already looking into like a Mr. Bean clown school or something, because I really want to make Anxious Girl Goes to the Spa clown routine, because there were many things about it that were very anxiety inducing in some ways. And I told him right up front, I'm very bad at relaxing, so we're here to learn. But there were lots of things, like the shower was incredibly hot and I couldn't change the temperature because there's too many knobs. So it was just various little things like that. It was totally making me laugh, though. Otherwise, it was just a beautiful experience. I mean, they were really nice there. They really weren't sneery at all. I don't go to spas, so I didn't know what to do. I don't know what the policies
protocols,
or
yeah.
protocols, or how you move around that space looking like you belong.
Right.
But they were so nice. It was really beautiful facility. The massage was amazing. I also got this like CBD body scrub treatment thing that was really nice. And so obviously I came out, like when I went back out to leave, this other lady was like, did you get a facial today? And I was like, no, I didn't. I got, you know, my two treatments. She's like, well, you are just glowing. And I was like, well, I feel like I'm glowing. And maybe she says that to everybody, but it worked for me. So it was just a lovely experience. I was like, I'm so glad I did it. It was so, so wonderful.
Cut to me. I'm like sweating. I did move the room. So I'm hauling all of our bags up and down elevators three times.
But yes, I called him. I was like, I'm done at the Bellagio. And he's like, I'm just moving us to our new room. So I'll come on through and I'll show it to you. And Eli meets me down in the lobby and he was like, all right, so yeah, I asked about a room upgrade or switching the room. And, you know, it's a better room. It's worth moving. I'm glad that we moved. Lower your expectations. And I was like, okay, it's fine.
It's just better.
It's just better. Yeah. So I was like, it's a standard room, whatever. And we go up to the 28th floor this time, higher than before. I'm like, oh, that's nice. He's like, the view's not as good and stuff, but whatever, it's fine. And he's walking me to the room and it's like right there by the elevators. Didn't realize he was filming me. That would have been a real giveaway, because he opens the door and it was like the most amazing suite that I've ever been in. I was like, what am I looking at?
Walk-in closet.
It had a walk-in closet. The bathroom was amazing.
Detached
the room
bathroom, a living room.
So cute. It had all of the little decor and details that I had been looking for.
Yeah.
And it was so lovely. And I was just like, what?
It was a worse view.
It was a worse view, but who cares?
That's okay, yeah.
The view inside a lot of time was looking way out the better.
Yeah.
Oh, man. It was just so such a nice surprise. So I was just like, I'm already feeling so good. And then he had spent all this time to make me feel even better. Oh. So it was really nice.
Well, look at me.
Look at you.
Sweating and dragging. And
I know. You had the very opposite of a relaxing experience. But
but then bullet points. Let's see. Lost some money, won some money, saw Ka at Cirque du Soleil, which is really cool.
Very cool.
We saw Fantasy at Luxor, which was... so we went for like, oh, we'll see like a striptease, sexy Vegas showgirls like, show.
We'll see some boobs, whatever.
It was hilarious. The MC was just killer. She's an incredible singer and comedian. And there was a stand-up that was awesome. Mm-hmm. It was just a great show. Really loved it.
Yeah, I was surprised because it's one of the cheaper shows that we went to. And I was like, this one's actually really good. And the girls were very pretty and they danced really well. And I mean, everything was really fun. So I was really just fun. Like, I don't know. This is great. And we were like right in the front row too, which is kind of freaky. But fortunately, nobody bothered us. They had other people. They had drunker people to make fun of.
We saw Piff the Magic Dragon from America's Got Talent. He was hilarious. And then, and then we were going to leave Friday and Caesar's Properties offered us two more free nights at the Horseshoe. I don't know why. We're not high rollers. We're not big spenders.
I know.
I guess they just like us.
They just said, why not?
And then we left. We checked out the day that MGM got hacked, but we had moved over to a Caesar's property, so we didn't have to deal with it. We didn't even know it was happening
until we left.
Yeah.
We also were there when Ed Sheeran canceled his concert just like an hour or something before it was supposed to go on.
Oh, my God.
And I had gone up to the room and seen these five girls leaving their room at the Horseshoe dressed like Ed Sheeran. Like
full
they
on.
Had full on Weasley red wigs. I was like, they're either Weasleys or Ed Sheeran. I don't know which one. And when I realized Ed Sheeran was playing, I was like, that's definitely what it was.
Yep.
And they're all wearing the same outfit. They had like drawn on facial hair and everything. And I was just like so excited for them because I was like, what an amazing night they're going to have at Ed Sheeran.
And then,
he canceled. And I was just thinking about them all weekend.
Oh.
I was like, I hope they went to karaoke and all sang Shape of You together or something.
I mean, people were mad. But I heard it was a legit safety issue.
Yes, it was.
So you got to do
it. It sounded like it was the right thing to do. Yeah. But I definitely felt sorry because we were talking about some people had the worst, very worst possible Vegas vacation that they could have had because they flew in to stay at an MGM property and see Ed Sheeran.
Yep.
And instead, they did not see Ed Sheeran, and they got their credit card information compromised and couldn't play any
and
slots.
And, like, hours to check out of your room.
Anyway, crazy situation. Yeah. So we got very... Maybe we didn't make our fortune in Vegas, but I still feel like we were very, very lucky.
Yes. Yes. We had a really nice time.
It was wonderful.
Ate some good food. So that's the bullet point. We won't spend the whole episode recounting like we did last year when we went to Vegas with Cherry and Jason. But we're back. We're in our house. Yay.
Not a suite.
Not a suite.
Bed does not get turned down every day.
No one comes in here and cleans when we go out to work.
Who's responsible for this bathroom?
Right.
Oh,
and
me?
None of the games I'm playing even have the possibility of paying me money.
I know.
Anymore,
you're paying them.
Yeah. So but onward
it's different
we trudge.
Here. It's different out here.
Yeah. I am excited to be back to this because I do love doing this so much more than sitting around and waiting to do this, which is what I spend the rest of my time doing.
Well, also, this one's really interesting.
Yeah, this is fun.
Because I get last episode, we were talking about Fuck for Forrest.
If you can remember way back, ask your grandparents if they remember that episode.
Yeah, go back to the ancestors.
Many decades ago.
One of our stories in that one was about the I guess it's not really technically a nonprofit, but they're trying to make pornography to raise money to give to environmental causes.
Yes.
And they sometimes have sex with vegetables.
Okay.
And so I was like, And apparently that is part of being an ecosexual, which is a whole sexual identity. I had never heard of this. Doing this show for 2 years had not come up for us. So this was really exciting. And it turns out that the pioneers of ecosexuality are a married lesbian couple who have spent decades making art around female sexuality, gender identity, queer identity, and environmental action.
Okay.
So lots of things that we're interested in, especially at this show. So let's talk about Annie Sprinkle, Beth Stevens, and the eco-sexual identity that proclaims that Earth is not our mother, but our lover.
Oh, okay, let's go.
Ooh la la.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all, an abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
Elizabeth Stevens was born in 1960 in Montgomery, West Virginia, deep in coal country, to a coal company owning family, which must be an interesting thing for her to deal with now that she's such an environmental, you know, activist.
Right.
She went to lots of great schools, Tufts, the Museum School, and Rutgers, earning fine arts degrees. And then she was hired at the University of California in Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz, in 1993. Mm-hmm. Where, as OutsiderFest.org writes, she was, quote, a feisty punk dyke playboy, interdisciplinary artist, and professor exploring themes of gender, queerness, and feminism.
Awesome.
I know, it sounds
that
amazing.
That was my crowd in college.
Hell yeah.
To be honest.
I don't know if I could have hung out with them. I would have felt not cool enough. But I would have been like, they're so cool doing the cool thing.
Oh, I was just like sitting like, just keep your mouth shut. Just, it's cool that you're here. Just live in it.
Just happy to be included, guys.
Just live in it. Don't say anything. Don't ruin it. Just let it happen.
Just happy to be in the room.
Exactly.
One of Beth's earliest projects is a film from 1989 called Women Eating. Mm. And another from the same year where she interviews Oaxacan women. And then she would eventually chair the art department at UC Santa Cruz twice. Once between 2006 and 2009, and then again from 2017 until 2020.
You know, it's very rude to watch women eating and women talking at the same time.
You can't.
You want to make sure you finish women eating, and then you can go into women talking.
Right. But don't then watch women swallowing. That's a very different film.
Oh, no.
The in-between film is not the same. It's not part of the series.
All right. So the other woman here, Annie Sprinkle, she's going to take a little bit longer to introduce. She was born Ellen F. Steinberg in Philly in 1954, and then her family moved to L.A., and then they moved to Panama during her teen years. And when she was 18, she was working at a movie theater in Tucson, Arizona, that was showing the seminal porn film Deep Throat.
Ah, the classic.
Ellen here was working at the Deep Throat screening, and the movie theater she was working at got busted for showing an adult movie.
Oh, we swear, we thought it was about the Nixon tapes.
Well, Ellen was called as a witness during this case, and when she went to the courthouse, she met and fell head over heels for Deep Throat's director, Gerard Damiano.
Wow.
She became his mistress, and she followed him to New York City, and not long after, she, of course, naturally started doing porn herself under the name Annie Sprinkle. Her best known porn, you all know and love, it's one that she co-directed. It's called Deep Inside Annie Sprinkle. And it was the second highest grossing porn film of 1981. Did you happen to find the first?
I did not. Yeah. I should find it.
You know what? It doesn't even matter because Deep Inside Annie Sprinkle.
I mean, come on.
We're really getting a lot of... I assume it's about an introspective look.
Yeah, exactly.
Into the soul of Annie Sprinkle and not...
It's basically beat poetry.
Sure, okay. Beat your meat poetry.
Beat your meat poetry. You know, Annie would probably approve of that.
Oh, yeah.
I think she'd be like, I'm down for beat your meat poetry. Let's get this going.
Bongo drums.
Jack Kerouac.
Jack Kerouac off.
Jack Kerouac off.
Yeah.
Doing beat the meat poetry.
Jack off, Kerouac off.
Oh my God, we should do this.
Beat the meat poetry.
Okay, I'm going to work on Anxious Girl Going to the Spa, but you need to work on Jack off, Kerouac off doing beat your meat poetry.
All right. That's it, everyone. Ridiculous Romance is canceled. We're focused on this project now.
We have some art to make. All right. Well, Annie then started getting into sex education as well as entertainment. Okay. She created a Sluts and Goddesses workshop about female pleasure in 1991. Mm-hmm. That then became a video workshop series.
Oh.
In 1996, she became the first known porn star to earn a doctorate degree, which she got in human sexuality.
Awesome.
And I love the qualifier. They're like, lots of people have doctorate degrees. Lots of people are porn stars. But a lot of people with doctorates don't tell you if they ever did porn.
Oh.
They don't let you know, but she's like, I'm proud of it.
She's the first one who said it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm proud of it. Yeah. I want you to know.
Okay.
I bet there's a lot more people now that have, like, doctorates that are on OnlyFans.
How else do you think they paid for medical school?
Exactly, right? But anyway, at the time, this was a real surprise. And then she pioneered feminist pornography. Or porn based on women's desires, which she kind of created because she wanted to defy a feminist group that operated in the 70s and 80s that was hilariously called WAP, Women Against Pornography.
What?
Which I kind of love the idea of Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion being like, you know what? I'm taking it back.
Taking back WAP.
WAP now means wet ass pussy. How about that?
Wow. Women Against Pornography. Get a bucket and a mop. We're going to clean up this town. What if that had been their slogan? It's like, we're going to get a bucket and a mop and clean up this town.
Oh my God. I love it so much. Annie Sprinkle also made lesbian porn.
Sure.
And a transgender love story film.
Oh, okay.
Which, you know, again, she's making movies in the 90s. So yeah. This was a real boundary that she was pushing.
Yeah.
Some other genres that she has been at the forefront of.
Wow. Whoops.
Include genres like eduporn, XXX docudrama,
oh.
Gonzo porn,
okay.
Art porn, and feminist erotica.
All right. Gonzo porn, more like gonzo journalism, not Muppets, I'm assuming.
Well, look, you know what?
Hey, there's something out there for everybody.
With pornography. But gonzo porn, like gonzo journalism, it kind of sounds like you run up on somebody and surprise them. Like,
yeah, Wikipedia tells me it's the style of pornographic film that attempts to place the viewer directly into the scene.
Oh, so it's like POV porn.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Maybe so. Oh, yeah. Yeah. POV is okay. What they get into here. Yeah. So it's like
apparently Annie
VR porn.
VR porn.
Early VR porn.
I'm surprised she's not working on some. Maybe she is.
She may be.
Well, Annie Sprinkle, one of the first to do POV porn,
there
I guess.
You go.
She also worked as a prostitute. She got into burlesque. She did live sex shows. And she wrote for sex magazines. So she's just all over the sex industry.
Ooh. Annie also started doing performance art, naturally. She needed every outlet she could find to get this. She clearly had a lot of performance
every
inside
outlet.
Of her. Hey. Now, this included her best-known piece, Public Cervix Announcement. Where she lets the audience view her cervix with a speculum and a flashlight to, quote, celebrate the female body. And I celebrate a lot of things that I don't need a very close look at. You know, like, don't tell me what's in that cake, for example. Right? I'm good with the big picture.
What doesn't know won't hurt me.
Yeah, exactly.
What I don't know won't hurt me.
Another performance piece she did was called The Legend of the Ancient Sacred Prostitute, where she does something called a, quote, sex magic masturbation ritual on stage.
Sex magic sounds like a Barry White song to me.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
baby. Ooh, I'm gonna turn you on with my sex magic.
Uh-huh. Give it to us, Barry.
If it don't work for you, Barry, that would be tragic.
Oh, with the rhymes.
Because we was made for love. And we was made for touching each other's butts. And we was made for love.
Wow, Barry White is
yeah,
here, everybody.
We was made for touching each other's butts.
Barry. How did you get in here?
I'm gonna pull a scarf right out of my hat. And then you'll jump in the box and I will split you in half. Straight up blow out your back. But I'll never go poof and disappear.
Okay, you tied the magic back into it. I see.
Yeah, I had to get
I see. That's good. Okay.
He's a sex magician.
Sex magician, yeah.
He's pulling things out of his hat.
He's pulling things out of somewhere. All right. Well, thanks for stopping by. Special guest star Barry White in today's episode.
I'm doing a real bad job, baby.
All right. So Annie also has toured internationally for years doing her performance art. She's often presented as a visiting artist at universities and colleges all over the U.S. and Europe. And her work is also studied in courses all over in colleges like women's studies, queer studies, film history, human sexuality, courses like that.
Mm-hmm.
The history of World War II.
Sure.
Home economics, I'm sure. AP calculus. That's high school.
That's high school,
it's an advanced class, so...
Yes. Making calculus hot again with Annie Sprinkle.
Now that would work.
I mean, maybe it would.
Uh-huh.
Well, that's pretty cool. I mean, that's cool to first of all get a doctorate in human sexuality,
sure,
and then start adding so much to the study of human sexuality with your own work and your own art and everything.
I mean, in such a no pun intended, untapped field. I mean, there is a lot of room for new movement and new ideas, mm-hmm, and stuff. There's barely anybody focused and studying it. So you come in and it's kind of it's the world's your playground, right?
Yeah.
You can kind of say now it's up to new scholars to contest what you said, but you've got no rules. You can kind of say whatever you want.
I guess that's true. She also was saying, she said in some interview that she was like, a lot of sex workers don't care about the art world, but I found it to be more free. Like, I was able to be more free with my sexuality and with my creative expression in the art world than I was in the sex world.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting because the art world can be very stuffy.
The art world can be very excluding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was a cool thing to read from her.
Because artists are kind of, sometimes artists, I have found, dabbling in the art world ourselves a little bit, sort of feel like if you're not also an artist, if you don't speak the language, if you don't understand, you're less invited.
Yeah.
Than us.
Yeah.
But with sex, like, everybody's invited. Like, you can't exclude, like, literally everyone.
Hey, now,
almost.
Not everybody.
Not everybody. But, you know, as a general rule, most people are involved in sex in some way in their lives.
That's
if
true.
Nothing else, it's what brought them here. So it's hard to exclude.
Very true.
Anyone from that.
Very true. And it's hard to, you can put a lot of academic language on the human body and stuff like that, but there's still a lot of room for a lack of pretension because it is, I mean, we make funny faces and we make funny noises. You know what I mean? It's a joyous expression a lot of the time. So anyway, it's hard to get too stuffy about it.
Right.
Getting stuffed.
Don't get stuffy about getting stuffed.
That's the Annie Sprinkle way. Well, anyway, maybe it's no surprise to anyone that when these two radical, queer, sex-positive, art-making feminists met each other, they, like, immediately fell head over heels for one another, and they started collaborating together. And in 2004, they committed to 7 years of art projects about love called the Love Art Laboratory.
Hmm.
And these projects always included a wedding.
Okay.
Now, at the time, this was really pushing some boundaries because marriage equality was a really big issue. It's kind of hard to remember how crazy this was now.
In the early 2000s,
and we were there for it, you know what I mean? But there were... There was such a tug of war going on in the U.S. about whether or not same-sex marriage was okay, basically.
Yeah.
So over the 7 years that these ladies were doing these projects, many states would legalize same-sex marriage in their own state and then have it overturned by a constitutional amendment, kind of like with California's Prop 8, or Prop 8, as we called it.
Right, that was really brutal.
Between especially 2004 and 2015, people were getting the right to have domestic or civil unions instead of marriage. It was just like a different word.
Mm-hmm.
So stupid. So they were getting permission for that, while other states were at the same time defining marriage as being between a man and woman. No one else can get married. Many places were issuing marriage licenses so people would get married and then they would later invalidate the marriage license. So now you're not married anymore.
God.
It's just a really chaotic situation going on for many years until finally, SCOTUS ruled same-sex marriage bans unconstitutional in 2015. Boom. Now we barely remember all this shit.
I know. Well, it's wild and, you know, and it's not like it's not coming up again.
Because
people are still real sensitive about it for some reason. And I'm sitting here after, you know, however many years we've been doing this show and thinking, y'all, can we just, ignore that. We got people out here trying to marry computer programs and buildings and shit. And this, and you know, personally, I'm like, there's nothing wrong with that. But at least can y'all just get away from when two humans are marrying each other? Just let it be.
It's fine.
It's fine. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's actually real nice.
Right.
It's a real nice thing that people do, and in to be nice. You know, like, what the hell is your problem?
It's a wonderful expression of, I'd like to stand by your side forever.
Ew!
Holy shit.
How dare you?
How beautiful, you know? But people were, like, feeling somehow like their marriage was lessened by same-sex marriage or something, even though literally it was just so they could have legal protections. That had nothing to do with anything sacred.
Yeah.
It had something to do with whether or not you could leave somebody something when you died or if they could have custody of their kids together and stuff like that. So it was kind of, it was just such a stupid temper tantrum that lasted literally like 11 years.
So Annie and Beth, their actual legal domestic partnership was in San Francisco. This happened alongside 33 other couples, a spectrum of LGBTQ and straight couples as well. Annie wore a silver disco dress and a feather-trimmed duster, and Beth wore a silver tuxedo. And the San Francisco Gay Men's Chorus and the transgender choir The Believers performed at this ceremony. This is when they thought of this idea of wedding as a performance art. And they started the Love Art Laboratory.
Yeah, Beth was saying, you know, it is a lot like a play. I think we said the same when we had our wedding. Because it was very much, you need a stage manager, your day of planner. You have to think about the audience. Yep. You have to think about
sets, costumes.
There's speeches to give, monologues,
dialogue,
basically to prepare.
Yep.
There's cues. I mean, everything about it is very performance-based.
Oh, yeah.
So they were like,
The only thing we missed was rappelling down from a helicopter at the beginning of ours. There was a lot. Well, there was a lot more performance. There was an idea for our wedding at one point that we were going to record a video message from ourselves from the future and pop in and say something. And we were going to have to time it out so that us at the altar would have to, like, speak to them.
That's right. That's why we didn't do it.
Like an old talk show bit. Oh, man. It would have been great, though.
It would have been vow
when
renewal.
We renew the vows.
Yeah, when we renew the vows, we'll have more money and it's going to be amazing.
We'll be in front of 400,000 people and it'll be the new greatest show.
We'll have costume changes. There will be helicopter.
So it's a wedding performance art idea, and each year of the Love Art Laboratory was assigned a color based on a chakra and a theme, right? So everyone is welcome to take their vows with these two. And apparently the ceremony would also always include an objection to the wedding, where a friend would get up and read the top 10 reasons why marriage should be abolished, about how it's outdated and unequal, you know, just to make sure that there was some perspective in the space, in the conversation, you know?
Right. Because they were like, you know, we're having fun experimenting with the performance of a wedding, the performance of love, who gets to get married in this country and stuff like that. But of course, lots of people find marriage to be a very outdated institution that does nothing for anybody. So they were like, why not?
It's just inclusivity, you know, your perspective is part of this, too.
Mm-hmm.
But we're also going to do it.
But
so
we're going to get married. We're going to get married.
That's how we kind of felt, you know, it was like there's a real silliness to the idea of marriage, the institution of marriage, and the history of marriage.
Right.
And also, like, we want to do that.
our
own way.
Yeah, it was just, there's something nice about having a party where everybody gets to come together and be excited that you found each other.
Yeah.
And and then there's something lovely, too, at least for us, since we liked each other's families. I guess I don't know about others, but there's something, too, about that feeling of, oh, you're part of my family now, so you need to meet everybody, or we're all mixed together. I need to meet your family. We're all one family. So it's important for us to, you know, share this space, break bread together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Say the magic words, the incantation
that
creates a vow. Which is real, I think. There is something magical about your promises, right?
Yeah, I think so. And then the cool trip afterwards. And then,
of course,
shout out to the sologamists, who I think deserve that party,
amazing,
too.
Whether,
if you're going to, you know, just marry yourself or whatever.
Find your true love in your own mirror if you need to. So according to CNN, the first Love Art Laboratory wedding was in 2004. It was the Red Year, featuring, quote, a series of public cuddling performances and hours-long kissing sessions. They hosted sidewalk sex clinics, and they held their red wedding at a former burlesque club. just a quick note, very different Red Wedding from the Game of Thrones Red Wedding.
Yeah.
A lot of these terms mean a lot of different things now than they used to.
Yeah, in 2004, I didn't know.
No. Back to CNN, quote, in the orange year, they married their community and guests came dressed as orange juicers and carrots.
All right.
But it was Annie and Beth's fourth green wedding when they came out to the world as ecosexuals and they started incorporating the environment more into not only their artwork, but into their love lives. And we will tell you all about that right after this quick break.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have a ton of questions about LASIK? You're not alone. That's why we created LASIK.com. One place where you can go to find every answer to every question on your mind. Like, how much does LASIK cost? How long does recovery take? How do I find a doctor? If you've been thinking about LASIK, go to LASIK.com now. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everybody.
So the green wedding to the earth took place in the woods, obviously.
Duh.
Where else? It had more than 150 collaborators and 400 guests, and they were all given bags of soil to breathe from deeply during the ceremony.
All I can picture is somebody breathing deeply and then be like,
oh, absolutely.
Sneezing everywhere.
I don't need to breathe dirt.
I guess I'm still on my Mr. Bean tip, but that's what I see in my head.
During this, a soprano did an operatic striptease. Some guy got drenched in green paint and wrapped up in a sheet. and a girl with a snake around her neck read poetry. There was a flautist. Someone got spanked with a bouquet of flowers. All very exciting, sort of earthy kind of stuff. You can watch a compilation of all these eco-weddings on their website, which is sprinklestevens.ucsc.edu. If you're interested. And if you never thought you'd see an EDU website where you get to watch someone get spanked with a bouquet of flowers or whatever, well, now you can.
It's quite interesting. You should check it out.
And would you call it safe for work?
Actually, yeah.
That video,
It's not pornographic at all. It's really not like that.
I hope the guy got drenched in green paint. It was like a ecologically sound green paint, you know?
You know, like, it's a great question. Gross. Are we talking about latex paint right now? Or
who knows? Well, who knows? Not us. That's not what we're here for. Facts.
And not us.
Information. Okay, so Annie and Beth then dressed all in green with big feathers and flowers, and anyone else at the wedding who cared to would repeat the vows to take the earth as their lover. And they took the eco-sex pledge, which is, quote, "I promise to love, honor, and cherish you, earth, until death brings us closer together forever." Which does make the earth kind of a pretty great partner.
It does.
You know, a human's going to shove off eventually.
They that's true.
But the earth.
Eventually the earth will reclaim you.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Yeah. All of us. Oof.
There's a whole eco-sex manifesto. And this is just the pledge at the end.
Mm-hmm. The earth will reclaim all of us, except for me, who, as you know, my plans, Diana, post-mortem, is to be frozen and shot into space.
That's right.
So the aliens can find me and either reanimate me or, you know, learn about humans and come here and, you know, do their thing, whatever that is. I assume it'll
whatever
be good.
Whatever it is.
my assumptions of aliens is that they would do good if they got here. Yeah.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah.
And we'll have to ask our friends, bleep blop.
You know, they do need to make an appearance, but I'm listening. I don't hear them coming now. So maybe
not
next
right
episode. As we've been going for a while, they clearly know that we don't have time.
They know we don't have time for that bit right now. So what is ecosexuality?
Oh, yes. The subject of the episode. We should finally get to that, huh?
Ecosexuality.
Only about 45 minutes.
Partly for Annie and Beth, it's kind of a way to make environmental activism a little more fun.
Okay.
They feel like it's usually pretty stuffy and moralistic and very like, you know, oh, shame, shame, shame.
Right.
Woe and fear, you know, around it. And there should be a healthy amount of fear around that sort of thing. But they call it like Al Gore stuff, the Al Gore effect or something.
Don't
like
get
that.
Me started. I honestly like An Inconvenient Truth was the lamest title for a movie that everyone should be paying attention to. Like, by the time you finish the word inconvenient, I'm asleep.
I don't care.
And I don't need. I don't know what this movie's about. Mm-hmm. It doesn't sound like it's for me. It doesn't sound interesting or important or an inconvenient truth. Okay.
Right?
Wake up, everybody. The earth is dying.
Right? Exactly. It's kind of a horrible death knell that you're sounding with a very boring bell.
Right.
But anyway, so they kind of were like, you know, this way we can bring a little humor, a little absurdism into the environmental movement.
Yeah.
Make it a little more accessible and fun. But mostly, the idea is about changing our mindset. They kind of feel like since we see Earth as a mother, we maybe take it for granted, like we might do with our own mother. Expect it to take care of us and need nothing in return.
Yeah.
Sort of unconditional, you know, I can take my laundry to her and she'll clean it, but I can forget her birthday and she'll forgive me.
Wow. Okay.
Kind of relationship. But they say a lover is a partner and they require respect.
Yeah.
They require give and take. They require love and care. And if you don't, they will leave you. They won't just keep loving you forever.
Right.
So Annie Sprinkle told Teen Vogue that by making Earth your lover, it's, quote, putting the responsibility on you to uphold your side of the relationship. It's revolutionary. I kind of like it, to be honest
with
you.
No, I really like that. It makes me think that maybe people should start treating their mothers a little more like...
First of all.
Well, and maybe not, you know, their lovers, but certainly like a partner.
But yeah, I think more how you treat them when you're grown, you know, and you start to understand what it takes to be a mom.
Yeah.
Whether you have kids or not, you're kind of like, wow, it turns out that was a really,
I know.
A really crazy thing somebody did for me.
I do try to pop into my parents now and then and say, wow, you know? Thanks, because you don't recognize what they're doing when you're a kid.
Not at all.
Because of course they are. You're a kid. Exactly. Somebody's going to put food in front of you. Somebody's going to, you know, make sure you get to school on time and, mm-hmm. and become a decent person, hopefully.
Hopefully.
You know, and then you're a grown up and you're like, we who have no children, I'm like, how the hell would I have the time and energy to devote to making sure a person becomes not the worst person right now? I do not have the focus for that, let alone anything else.
Or sometimes, like, you know, my cousin, who's like 11, uh-huh. will ask me a question about something. I'm like, how the hell could I answer this without, A, making you very cynical, or, or I don't know, just...
Well, kid.
I know.
Let me tell you something about life.
Well, I'm like, sometimes you just want the kid to vent, right?
Yeah.
So you're like, ah, oh, man, that sucks, whatever. And then other times you're like, should I be giving advice? Should I be uh-huh. like, well, don't think about it this way. Think about it this mm-hmm. way. Or like, what about that bully maybe is going on at home? And we want to be compassionate, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just hard to figure out which way to go and how to mold a person, I guess. And then sometimes you're tired and you're like, I don't care about mm-hmm. your weird thing at school. You won't care about this. You're 11. Like, you're going to forget about this by the time you're in college. But at the time when you're 11, it feels huge. I remember that. Being 11 mm-hmm. and something feeling like it's going to last forever and it's not going to ever be any different than this. And I'm very scared and I'm very afraid of how it's going to turn out. Anyway.
Well.
Parenting is hard. Hot take.
If your parents or your mentors or whoever you owe that to is out there and you're close to them, you know, say mm-hmm. hey. Say what's up.
Say hey. You know, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Mine are listening, so I don't have to. Or at least my mom is. She'll tell my dad.
She'll say, by the way, Eli says thanks.
Eli says, he cares. We'll see him on Wednesday. We're going to a movie.
By the way, Eli says thanks.
Eli says thanks.
Anyway, so basically, yes, they're like, you take your parents for granted, but it's harder to take your lovers for granted. We mm-hmm. should see the earth more as a partner in life mm-hmm. and that we need to cherish and let them know how much we appreciate them and all that stuff, or they're going to leave us high and dry. And the Ecosexual Manifesto includes conservation principles like buying less and then only buying local, organic, and sustainable products, as well as working towards world peace. Because as the manifesto says, quote, bombs hurt.
Oh.
And that's true, right?
Yeah.
They scar the earth as well as people.
Right.
So.
Now, ecosexuality is a sexual identity. But it doesn't have to be your main sexual identity. And how far you take it, if you are an ecosexual, is totally up to you. Vice News spoke to Amanda Morgan, who's an ecosexual, and she's faculty at the UNLV School of Community Health Sciences. She told Vice that it's kind of like the Kinsey scale, right? Mm-hmm. Some ecosexuals, they keep it real simple. They're just like, I just get sustainable, environmentally sound sex toys, mm-hmm. right? This mm-hmm. was not, this is not covered in blood diamonds and the skin of an endangered creature.
I want a locally made gourd with bees in it.
It's a gourd with bees in it, sure. Although I don't know what that does for the bees.
Actually, probably not ecosexual approved.
No.
A bunch of bees in a gourd.
But other people also keep it kind of simple. They might enjoy skinny dipping or naked sunbathing. So they're just kind of mm-hmm. feeling the elements
That's
on
right.
them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, on the other end of the scale, of course, is the people we all think of when we hear the word ecosexual, right? She says that there's people who, quote, roll around in the dirt having an orgasm covered in potting soil. They are people who fuck trees or masturbate under a waterfall.
Oh.
Right?
They fuck trees.
Yeah, we'll just leave that to your imaginations.
Good luck.
These people might also have sex with vegetables, like our friends from the last episode in Fuck for Forest.
Right.
And I was going to ask you what you think is the sexiest vegetable.
I don't find vegetables very sexy.
I don't mean what vegetable are you sexually attracted to.
Hmm.
But like, you know, if you were going to cast a vegetable in a leading role in a movie.
Right.
And we're just like, that's one sexy vegetable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have one?
Well, what's funny is that I think melons and cucumbers or zucchini have been the common,
right?
The ones that you usually.
Right.
But thanks to emojis, it's now peaches and eggplants.
Oh, sure.
So I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't
is
know.
There what a boobs emoji?
Is there a boobs?
Because peaches is butts.
Right. Peaches. Melons are boobs. Right.
But we don't. I don't think there's a two melons emoji.
There is not.
And there should be. A bundle of melons.
I wonder what the boob emoji is.
Well, regardless of emoji.
Maybe there's a blue-footed booby emoji and they just say, show me your boobies.
Oh, show me your boobies, yeah.
I hope so.
I don't think we got that
note yet. To the emoji makers, make a blue-footed booby emoji and I promise it will get some use.
I will say there was a, at the grocery store the other day, we got back from our trip, hadn't cooked a home-cooked meal in a while and I really wanted a salad.
Yeah.
And I went and got a cucumber. And if I may say, this particular batch of cucumbers were not only huge, but
veiny?
Ruler straight. No, not veiny. No, they were just the straightest cucumbers I've ever seen.
So you could really do something with that.
I guess so. There was I picked one up and a part of me was like, what? This cucumber's making me think some kinds of things I'm not comfortable with.
I don't appreciate the thoughts this cucumber made me have. Kroger?
Anyway, the answer is pomegranate.
Okay.
Which is, I guess, a fruit, not a vegetable.
Well, there you go. That's why I didn't say it.
Well, it's a very, that goes back in art history. The pomegranate was all about fertility and sex.
Sure, because lots of seeds.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I guess so. Gross. Now I don't like the pomegranate.
Great. Onwards we go. Ruined everything.
All right. Well, the manifesto does include the quote, "We hold these truths to be self-evident, that we are all part of, not separate from, nature. Thus, all sex is eco-sex." And I get that. I've kind of said myself in the past, like, well, you know, we talk about what we do is unnatural, but we're animals. Kind of everything we do is natural in a way.
I guess so, yeah.
Maybe.
This is the human animal.
Yeah. I mean, birds and beavers tear apart plants to build their homes and you know, it's not.
They do. There are bugs that eat other things from the inside out sometimes to live. So it can be a brutal world out there in the animal kingdom.
Hard pass.
And we are part of the animal kingdom. And I think we forget that a lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I like a lot of the underlying principles of this.
Yeah.
I don't think I could fuck a zucchini or anything,
no. But
like, I'm not about to start like rubbing up on a tree.
Yeah.
But I do love trees. I enjoy looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, we have stood in admiration of a tree.
Oh my God.
Before.
Yeah. We live in Atlanta.
Like
we're surrounded by beautiful trees. I like that. All sex is eco-sex. You've had eco-sex then. Maybe you might be having eco-sex right now. As
right. Well, you're listening
to
our
podcast voices
for some reason.
Wow. Email us if you did that.
I know. Well, after the green wedding to the earth, Annie and Beth had even larger and more theatrical weddings all over the world. They were always collaborating with different artists. So these are like, you know, often dozens to hundreds of people working on these weddings. In the blue year, they performed a wedding to the Adriatic Sea at the Venice Biennial. And then they married the sky in Oxford, UK.
Okay.
In their purple year, they had a nighttime rave marriage to the moon in L.A.
All right.
Annie and Beth both dressed like aliens. I think a lot of people did.
Sure.
Of like a outer space, you know, alien
thing.
And it looked really fun. I would go to that party. They also did a daytime ceremony with the Appalachian Mountains. In the white year, they married the snow in Ottawa, Canada, right after a huge snowstorm.
Get in line.
Listen, and it was in this beautiful, like, cathedral-like church. And so it was really pretty.
In
the golden year, they married the sun in San Francisco, and it's like, it looks like they're at the top of a mountain and it's sunset and it's all very beautiful. Of course, everyone is wearing the colors, you know, of the theme and everything too. So everybody's very on theme.
Can I say I would marry the sun at sunrise?
It might have been sunrise.
Because otherwise, as soon as you get married,
it's gone.
Well, San Francisco probably sunset because they're in the west, so you wouldn't really have a good sunrise.
Maybe,
but you'd have a great sunset.
That's probably
so, but yeah.
Well, and then you can go right into the wedding night.
Sure. But where's the groom? He disappeared.
I mean, he passed out because he got too drunk. It's not the first time.
Sure.
Even after their 7-year Love Art Lab project ended, the weddings continued. They had a punk rock all black wedding to Coal in Spain, in Spain's coal country. And they also had a dirty wedding to the soil in Austria, where like literally everybody is like rolling around in dirt.
Sure.
They're wearing brown. They look like they're rocks or something. It's very crazy.
All right. Well, in 2013, Beth Stevens went back to her hometown in coal country to make a documentary about mountaintop removal in West Virginia. A mountaintop removal, or MTR, is also called mountaintop mining, or MTM. You might have heard it either ways. And it came about because tunneling underground to get to coal seams is dangerous and expensive. And people figured, all right, well, instead of going through the mountain, why don't we just use explosives to take off whatever is on top of the seam and expose the coal?
Right.
Now, it is a lot safer, but it also destroys, you know, a huge amount of habitat for animals, for plants, as well as obviously ruining the mountainous skyline.
Yeah.
Nobody wants a bunch of flat mountains.
They're not mountains anymore.
Right.
They're buttes.
Right. Plus, whatever they remove from the top of the mountain, often exposing 400 vertical feet, so we're talking about like a lot of rock and toxic byproduct, ends up getting dumped into neighboring valleys or hollers. If you know anything about
a holler.
Appalachia, those hollers are very important cultural systems, right?
Right. Well, and people live in them.
Well, yeah.
I mean, you know, it's not great to dump toxic waste anywhere.
No, and these are people who've had these homes for, you know, hundreds of years, basically.
Mm-hmm.
The documentary itself is called Goodbye Gauley Mountain, where Beth shows the struggle of a community who love their natural mountain environment, but also they rely on mountaintop removal for the local economy. It's kind of trapped between two worlds there. Now, after a screening of the film, Beth and Annie married Gauley Mountain. Beth explained to one interviewer, quote, "Ecosexuality inserts an erotic humor that plays against the horrific subject matter. So far, the feedback that I've received at film previews makes me realize that these are effective strategies for creating space to briefly cut the feeling of despair that MTR evokes."
This is interesting to me because actually, your mom just shared on Facebook this morning an article from, I believe, Forbes about solastalgia.
Mm.
Which is the feeling of depression and anxiety that comes from knowing that your environment is in danger, basically. So it was like the kind of deep grief that you can feel when a natural landscape that you're used to is changing dramatically around you, that kind of thing.
Oof.
Which is interesting that there's a word for it, but also like the fact that they were tapping into early on that climate change, global warming, you know, environmental disaster, impending doom kind of stuff is really depressing. It's very hard to look at it because it makes you feel so hopeless and impotent. Wow. If the world is ending, what are you supposed to do? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think they're kind of tapped into that a little early on.
Huh.
And we're now just now kind of talking about it a little more.
Reminds me of on Reddit recently, I read someone talking about the concept of Sonder. It's sort of the opposite of solipsism, like where you're very internally focused and your world is the center of all things.
Yeah.
And Sonder is sort of like, oh, there's storms happening on Venus right now.
Mm.
You know, there's a guy in Spain eating a sandwich and living his life. It's this recognition that every random person and even places where there are no people are experiencing time passing. Mm. Stuff is happening
right
outside of your perception of it.
Yeah.
And I find it both kind of overwhelming mm-hmm. to think about that because it's huge and it makes you feel very, it can make you feel very insignificant. But sure. Someone also pointed out it can have the opposite effect where you feel there's so much existing out there in the universe. Your existence is very unique and special.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of amazing feeling at the same time.
You know who had a butt ton of Sonder is Kurt Vonnegut.
Oh, yeah.
If you read any of his books, he loves to do that where he'll just have someone bump into somebody and then he'll tell you who they bumped into his whole life.
Yeah.
Like he'll just kind of be like, and then eventually they, you know, whatever happens
yeah.
to them. And they're not important to the story, but he just tells you everything about them. And I remember reading one of his books and being like, man, how many people have I bumped into? And I haven't thought about what they did after that.
Yeah.
Like they ceased to exist for mm-hmm. me, basically. And I ceased to exist for them. But we both went on to continue to do shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's really crazy.
Yeah. A Butt Ton of Sonder by Kurt Vonnegut.
He would write it and he would do this little asshole drawing right on top. Well, Beth and Annie's weddings, these eco-sex weddings, really struck a chord with the art world and with a lot of people. Because even after they stopped organizing the weddings themselves, they kept getting married. Right before the pandemic, a group called Future Farmers organized a wedding for them to marry the fog at UC Santa Cruz.
Cool.
And then I bet they used a lot of tool. You know what I mean? Like something really
that. Yeah.
And then in 2021, an artist married them to the brine shrimp of Great Salt Lake in Utah.
Dope.
All told, they've apparently performed something like 19 weddings in 9 countries. They've also toured 2-person shows all over the world. And then in 2017, they were part of a German art festival called Documenta 14. This is a really interesting arts festival I would love to attend one day in my life because it happens every 5 years and it lasts 9 months. So the selection process, I think you get like 3 years to work on your projects and then you have a whole 9 months to work with your project. So people do various different performances and installations. They can do some really large scale stuff at Documenta. Yeah. And Beth and Annie were no different. They did a bunch of shit at Documenta 14. They screened their newest film, which is called Water Makes Us Wet. Love it. All their titles are amazing. They set up a bed in a museum lobby where they would cuddle people between them for 7 minutes, which Annie called, quote, an anti-Trump wall protest of sorts.
Oh.
And they also did an eco-sex walking tour. The idea of that is just being like, you would walk around and you'd have your attention called to stamens, you know, and like erotic flower, you know, like just look at that flower begging for your attention kind of thing, just to call your attention to the natural
flower
world.
Is thirsty.
Oh, that flower is
shaking its
thirsty
thang
for you, babe. But Annie and Beth are far from the only ecosexuals out there.
Oh, sure.
We've talked about a couple already, but there's several more and we will fill you up.
All right.
Right after this.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Have you been thinking about LASIK but not sure if you're a candidate? Just go to LASIK.com/quiz and take our free candidacy quiz. In just a few minutes, you'll know if LASIK is likely right for you. And if it is, we'll connect you with experienced LASIK doctors in your area. Start your journey towards 20/20 vision. Take our free candidacy quiz at LASIK.com/quiz. Yeah, LASIK.com. Easy to remember, so you know where to start.
LASIK, LASIK.com.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season 2 of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back.
All right, according to The Guardian, right before Documenta, Annie and Beth hosted their fourth and largest ecosexual symposium, and this included 300 ecosexuals from all over the world, and performances that included, quote, eco-sexy Shakespeare from Luke Dixon, the founder of Theatre Nomad in the UK, a demonstration of Grassilingus by Annie Sprinkle on the lawn of UC Santa Cruz, and a very eco-sexy poem, which we'll, of course, read for you right now. Mm-hmm. So let's go down to Poetry Corner and read maybe one of the most Poetry Corner poems we've read.
Probably.
Dirt, which was originally written and performed by the musician Peaches.
Dirt, dirt, dirty dirt, dirt. Stay away from the dirt. You'll get dirty. It's a mess. Yes, yes. We want to get down and dirty. Hit the dirt. Dig in the dirt.
Dirt is a wonder. Dirt is real. Dirt is precious. Dirt gives us breath. Dirt will sustain us. Dirt makes life. Dirt is life. We need to be dirty. We need dirt.
Break it down, earthworm. Break it down. Break it down. Fungi love me. Humble humus. All hail bacteria, the criteria. Release the nutrients. Release us. Fertilize us. Treat us like dirt. Give us dirt.
We wanna be soiled, richly soiled. In sand, silt, and clay. We will lay, we will lay. Let's get dirt on our hands. Cover us in dirt. Make us dirty. Dirt is the shit. Dirt is the shit. All right, Peaches.
Look, that sounds like a Peaches song.
It does sound like a Peaches song.
I would listen to her do it because you know she would do some cool shit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's probably got insane backing tracks and everything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Insane stuff. Also, eco-sexy Shakespeare. I wish I could find some text for that, but
right?
It's nowhere. So, Luke Dixon, if you're listening, I want a transcript. Is it like two B's or not two B's?
Oh, two B's.
Or is it like, shall I compare thee to a summer's day?
Oh, sure.
Thou art more sexy. I don't know.
I just, every Shakespeare quote I ever learned just vanished from my mind. And I've done 3 Shakespeare plays. In my life.
You sure have.
Yep. Nothing.
The quality of booty is not strange.
There we go.
It droppeth as gentle like rain
it, like
from heaven.
It is hot.
Like it is hot. It droppeth like it is hot. In Interview Magazine, Annie Sprinkle also mentions a Chinese artist who made, like, ecosexual art.
Okay.
Their name is Zhang Bo, and they have an ongoing film series since 2016 called Pteridophilia, where he showcases a sexual act with a pteridophyte, or a spore-dispersing plant, in a forest in Taiwan.
Okay.
Artnews.com describes the videos as showing, quote, close-up shots of men, some of them BDSM performers, stroking their penises with ferns, rubbing their nipples against spiky stems, or ejaculating onto tendrils that then drip with semen.
All right.
I know. I was like, this is not a movie I would spend a lot of time watching probably myself.
Well, I'm thinking about the one brief time I tried gardening and I pulled some of these little clover looking plants out of the ground and came back and my hands just turned red. They were all, it was like I was having some kind of reaction. And then I was told by our friend Sammy, who's a professional landscaper and gardener, she said, oh, no one's allergic to those.
Oh,
I was like, well, something happened here. So it's just me. So maybe I'm hyper reactive to everything and I don't want to rub my dick on any ferns.
I don't want you to rub your dick on any ferns either, babe.
Done.
Well, Zhang isn't just making these for shits and giggles or anything. He feels that by showing queer men having relations with ferns, which are kind of a common undervalued plant, mm-hmm. he is, quote, emphasizing structures of marginalization across species and proposes possibilities of intimacy between them. Mm. So kind of, you know, ferns are lesser than orchids, but who says and why? And, so like who is lesser person and who says and why?
Okay.
And this is kind of reminiscent of Annie Sprinkle's work in the post-porn movements, where she was very concerned with stereotypes in pornography, representation in porn. That's why she was trying to make transgender porn and stuff like that.
Okay, yeah.
She was kind of, and you know, which bodies are allowed to be portrayed as sexual bodies.
Okay.
So I'm sure she also was thinking about plus size women and plus size men and, you know, just what we consider to be sexy and sexual and stuff like that.
Zhang has a less graphic 16-minute dance video that came out in 2021 called Le Sacre du Printemps, which means the rite of spring, where, quote, naked men gyrate passionately against trees in a verdant forest. They writhe and moan in ecstasy. At midpoint, the camera turns upside down as the men drop to the ground. What was a frenzy dissipates into serenity as they lie still, their bodies melting into the mossy floor. What the artist calls an ecosexual courtship.
Hmm.
So a little less, ejaculating on plants and more just kind of
more of a
becoming
dance.
One with the earth and a dance. Yeah.
More of a dance film than a sex film, I guess.
Into it. Much like Annie and Beth, Zhang sees sexuality as this sort of mundane fact of life and nature, right? Like mm-hmm. it just happens. He told Art News, quote, sex is everywhere in nature and interspecies sex is not a human invention. He pointed to things like orchids that evolved to look like bees visually. Mm-hmm. And that, of course, tempts bees into coming in and trying to hump a flower.
That's right.
And that helps pollinate them, right? Mm-hmm. So the Sierra Club even suggests that our old friend Walt Whitman might have been an ecosexual. Mm-hmm. They quoted this passage in Song of Myself, quote, it is for my mouth forever. I am in love with it. I will go to the bank by the wood and become undisguised and naked. I am mad for it to be in contact with me.
Actually, yeah. That does kind of make him sound like an ecosexual.
I certainly would lean more towards that he was a poet who was good with metaphor. Rather than like him literally saying, I want to fuck this river.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever.
Well, several of our subjects have loved some naked sunbathing, like Harry Crosby, for example,
right.
who was married to Caress Crosby, who invented the bra, the modern bra. He loved to sunbathe naked.
Mm-hmm.
And Ben Franklin liked an air bath.
Sure.
So I don't know how much that is ecosexuality and how much that was like Ben Franklin literally thought there was some medicinal property to it, or like people who sun their assholes, whatever that's called. People do still doing that, I think.
And then, whereas me, like, I want to dress like a Jawa every time I go outside. Full cloak. No sand or sun or wind will touch. Little gold eyes.
Golden goggles.
Uh-huh.
Help you see in a dust storm.
I'm good.
More recently, Annie was a consultant on the HBO series The Deuce. That's the show that shows the rise of the sex industry in New York in the 70s and 80s, what some people call the golden age of porn.
I didn't watch that.
I didn't either. It stars James Franco and Maggie Gyllenhaal. I know.
Is that James Franco? Show?
But Maggie Gyllenhaal is great. Annie apparently, I guess, was giving her most of the consultation.
It was a
lot about the mindset around sex work and stuff
like
that. And so that's definitely very interesting, especially if you're someone like me who is a little bit of a prude when it comes to my own body. I don't really care about what anybody else is doing. But when it comes to my own body, it's very particular people are allowed to touch and stuff or see me naked or something like that. So I think Maggie maybe has, you know, she was sort of like saying it was hard to get into that mindset. And Annie gave her some real help with that or whatever. Beth and Annie updated the EcoSex Manifesto to respond to COVID policies like social distancing and masking.
Oh, okay.
And there's even like pictures of some ecosexuals wearing masks that have like grass sprouting from it and
hilarious.
Stuff like that. So, you know, they kept the vibes going, all right, during the pandemic. And Annie is also in recovery from both lung cancer and breast cancer.
Oh.
Which she said, at least in 2019 or 2020, when she gave this Interview Magazine interview, she says she's doing fine now.
Okay, good.
But, of course, that, you know, took them away from art for a minute. They had more important things to do. And she also thinks that maybe the breast cancer may have been a result of some toxic permanent ink that she used in the 90s.
Oh, no.
She used to make these tit prints, she called them, and they had, like, cubist or heart-shaped or, like, cone-shaped boobs.
Amazing.
You know, different with like kind of, it almost looks like tintypes or something like that. But anyway, they're fun. And she says, you know, a lot of artists, you know, they get killed by their materials because people use toxic paint, so they have fumes or whatever. And she's like, that's part of the life.
Man.
But she's also trying to get her body of work archived, including all her tit prints and and all her writing and all these amazing photos that she's taken throughout the years. Tons of her educational material and stuff like that. So she's working to get that archived, hopefully at Harvard. She mentioned in the Interview Magazine that their Schlesinger Library has a sex worker archive.
Oh, nice.
Which I think is really cool.
Yeah.
So kind of maintaining some of that history.
Right.
The people who actually lived that history instead of from the perspective of people who are judging it from one way or another.
Right, right.
So I think that's really cool. Hopefully she does get hers. It seems like she would deserve a place in the Schlesinger Library.
That's awesome. Man, good for them. And still at it.
Mm-hmm. And still
which
at
I love
it.
Too. They must be, what, 1954? So almost 70 now?
Yeah.
Actually, she's 69. Annie Sprinkles.
69. Nice.
That's cool. Wow.
Yeah, what do you think?
I mean, what do I think? Well, on one hand, I like the sentiment that we're all ecosexuals, right? Because we're all having sex with natural living things of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
That's fine. I don't need to roll around in the dirt. As was previously explained, I'm good with excluding the elements from my life as much as possible. I'm a very comfortable indoors. Well, I love the outdoors. I love camping, love going out, things like that. But I don't like bugs. So that's the main thing. I just don't like bugs. Keep them off of me. So I do like a lot of clothes.
Because
they are, to be in my defense, bugs love me.
They do.
And
they
I've had a long history of like other beings being really attracted to me that I have to kind of fend off. It's been sort of the story of my life.
Now, this is actually a good point that you've just brought up.
Oh, yeah.
Because of all 19 of the weddings that we looked into, not a single one of them was to bugs.
Hell no. Why would you marry bugs?
Bug. They're part of the natural world.
Well, you know what?
If there weren't bugs, lots of things wouldn't eat. Lots of things would not procreate. Lots of things would not pollinate.
That's great. But you know what I want to do? I want to hold a mass ceremony of divorce against bugs.
We're sick of your shit, bugs.
I'm going to kick them out and say you're no
so
longer
abusive.
Welcome here. Here's a box full of your stuff. Get out and don't come back. Restraining order filed.
Full of your stuff.
Yeah.
Here's the silk from your cobweb, you bastard.
Oh, I love spiders.
I know. Spiders are great. And
spiders
not
great.
Bugs. So
no,
technically
they
don't
eat
count.
Bugs. And that's why spiders are dope. And they're all welcome at my house as long as they stay up in the corners and inside the walls.
They're supposed to go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just think that's interesting. I wonder why not. If we could get them to marry mosquitoes or something that is less...
because they said they're trying...
Less pretty and less nice about nature?
They said they're also trying to have fun.
True, you're so right.
And keep it lighthearted.
That's not fun.
And silly. And that's, nobody wants, who would come to that wedding? The mosquito marriage. Like, what are you going to walk out naked into a swamp, like cover yourself in honey and say, have at it, mosquitoes
have
and bees.
At it.
Let's become one. No, I'm going to end up in the hospital.
Wow, well, they can marry bees. Bees are very important.
Bees are very important. And I think that bees really like their space. And I
don't
want to
be married.
I do not want to impose on a bee's space.
Okay.
Or any stinging insect.
Mm-hmm. It's
most
funny
insects.
To say about an animal that lives like really packed in with other bees.
Yeah. That's why they're like, we don't need any giant human bodies coming near us.
True. You're taking up a lot of space.
Uh-huh.
Would I would go to any of these weddings, though.
100%.
I think they're probably really easy to laugh at. I'm sure a lot of people are laughing because it's very hippie, dippy, and very art this and that. And, you know, it is easy to laugh at for sure.
Well,
I really like the vibe of it in a lot of ways. And I like the foundation of it, which is we need to find a different way to think about the world that makes us respect it more and cherish it more. Obviously, calling it our mother is not working.
Right.
We are not taking care of it.
Yep.
So we need to think about different language around it or different mindset around it. That's huge, right? Changing mindset, that changes everything.
Didn't we talk in the last episode about sexy Gaia from Captain Planet?
Oh, we sure did.
Yeah. I'd take her as a lover.
There you go.
I was going to say, we recently talked about the perception of artistic things like this as being pretentious and serious. And I really like something like this that I think they want you to laugh.
Yeah,
right?
They
do. Obviously, it's silly that I'm marrying the sun, you know?
Yeah.
There's a realness to it. Like, there's something that we want you to take from this. Mm-hmm. But also, like, if you're taking it so seriously, it's like, this is art. And, you know, then you're doing it wrong.
You're kind of
the whole point is kind of be lighthearted about it.
Yeah.
And have a good time. So I imagine there's a lot of silliness and laughing and, like, look what we're doing. Isn't it ridiculous? Because ridiculousness is also joyful.
Yes, it is.
I really think.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And I like that too, joy around loving the environment
instead
of fear and moralistic shaming of others.
Right.
You know, it's more about like, we love it. Go out and touch grass.
Yeah.
It's the touch grass movement, basically,
right.
of like,
right.
stop being inside on your screens, go out, look at this miraculous world full of unpredictable surprises and beauty and everything. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
Fucking a vegetable. Too far for me.
Sure.
Too far, but you know what? I guess I don't care as long as you're not doing it in the grocery store in front of me.
And if you are, just make sure you buy that one and don't put it back. I do. I'm really conscious.
This is another layer that is upsetting.
No one's fucking them in the grocery store.
And
they're surely
putting them back.
Purchasing them first. I've been very conscious lately about trying not to touch any produce that I don't put in my cart. You know, I really sometimes you really have to pick up an avocado and like give it a little grope and stuff. But you know, like bell peppers, I really try to look at it, which ones look rubbery. I don't want to pick everyone up because, you know, A, everybody else is doing that. True. And B, let me just reduce the number of hands that went onto this.
I mean, but you wash the vegetables before you cook them, right?
No. I put them in the cart bare naked. I roll them down the conveyor belt of the grocery store.
Good.
And then I'll rinse them off in a puddle in the parking lot before I bring them home. And then
I hope you let a stranger sneeze on them.
I just assume that they have. I don't know. I can make more of an effort for that if you want.
That would be nice.
Okay. Yeah. No
Thanks.
Problem.
Just to make sure.
No problem. Yeah.
Just a little
Sorry,
piece
I didn't
of
mean
mine.
To assume. Yeah. So that's the state
and
of our
with
vegetables.
That, I will never eat another vegetable again.
Wow. Well, you're going to go starve. Awful hungry around here because I cook and I'm vegetarian.
And we don't eat a lot of meat. I am screwed. Thank you for tuning into my final episode before.
Your hunger
I
strike.
I become closer to the earth forever.
Well, okay.
I would love to hear what y'all think about eco-sex.
Definitely.
This is a different one for us. It's, you know, usually our weird sexualities, they're pretty honestly into the sex part. You know, like having sex with the cars or marrying the buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
Like they're very much feeling a romantic connection. And I'm not saying they're not, but I feel like it's more of a political artist.
Yeah,
movement.
More message driven. Yeah.
More message driven is a good way
sure.
to put it.
Yeah.
So, but I don't know. I think they're very interesting women. That's for sure.
I certainly would not be bored having a conversation with them.
I don't think you would. I'm going to do it. Well, we would love to hear what you think about ecosexuality, about Annie Sprinkle. Have you seen deep inside Annie Sprinkle? do you know anything about Beth Stevens? I mean, any of this that struck a chord with you, we would love to hear from you as always. Our email address is ridicromance@gmail.com.
That's right. Or you can find us on Instagram. I'm at Oh Great, It's Eli.
I'm at Dynamite Boom.
And the show is at Ridic Romance.
And we love y'all very much. Thanks so much for your patience between episodes.
Yeah.
Hopefully it was worth the wait.
I think so.
And we will see you soon with more.
All right. Bye-bye.
Love you. Bye.
So long, friends, it's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher, back with another season of the global number one podcast, The Girlfriends. Last time, we investigated the murder of Gail Katz. This time, we're uncovering the identity of the woman who was buried in Gail's grave for a decade before she disappeared. Join me and the rest of the club as we tell her story. Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season three of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...scams a bunch of famous athletes out of untold fortunes...
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
It's just unbelievable.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.